I had to learn how to paddle evenly with one arm, and when I felt the wave pick me up, I had to put my hand flat on the center of the deck to get to my feet rather than grabbing the surfboard rail the way you would if you had two hands. My first couple of tries didn't work. I couldn't get up. I have to admit I was a little bit discouraged. I thought it was going to be easier than it was. My dad, who was in the water with me, kept shouting, "Bethany, try it one more time. This one'll be it." So I did. Then it happened. A wave rolled through, I caught it, put my hand on the deck to push up, and I was standing. I guess I started getting the technique wired after that. Of course, once I was on my feet, everything was easy. It's hard for me to describe the joy I felt after I stood up and rode a wave in for the first time after the attack. I was incredibly thankful and happy inside. The tiny bit of doubt that would sometimes tell me, "You'll never surf again," was gone in one wave. Even though I was all wet, I felt tears of happiness trickling down my face. Everyone was cheering for me. It was a great moment. I caught a whole bunch of waves that day, mostly white water, but getting up got easier and easier each time. The next day, Thanksgiving, we were supposed to be leaving for the mainland. I went down to the beach that morning with Sarah and my friends. I wasn't supposed to go surfing, but I couldn't control myself. I saw a guy with a nice camera on the beach, and I figured he might be a paparazzo, so I walked up to him and asked him to please not take any pictures of me surfing. Then I paddled out with my friends. Holt got out his video camera and filmed my rides. That day I didn't ride the suit, but took off on the blue waves. It was much easier than it was the first day. When I got home and told my parents that I couldn't restrain myself and that I went surfing, they weren't upset. In fact, they understood completely, because they were surfers too. As time went on, I got more and more comfortable catching waves and standing up with one arm. I figured out some things I could do to help as well. Getting out through powerful surf was going to be hard because most surfers grab the rails of their boards with both hands and dive the nose under oncoming white water, a move called duck diving, since it resembles what a duck does when it goes underwater. I couldn't duck dive with one hand until we came up with the idea of putting a hand strap in the top center of my board that I could grab hold of and use to push under the white water. Sometimes people ask me if I'm ever scared of sharks, now that I'm surfing all the time again. Well, the answer is yes. Sometimes my heart pounds when I see a shadow under the water. I do think about it a whole lot more than I ever did before I was attacked. Sometimes I have nightmares about being attacked by a shark. And I'm not ready to go out and surf tunnels again. And I'm not sure I'll ever go back there. Alana and I sometimes talk about it. Sometimes we say to each other that we will go out there again on October 31st, a year from the day I got attacked, just to prove to ourselves that we're not afraid. But then I get spooked. Yet even when my nerves get the best of me, I do know this. God is watching out for me. And while I don't want to do something stupid like paddling out where someone has just seen a shark, in the end, I trust him to take care of me. The best I can be. I wish I could say I just hop on a board and that's all it takes to win a competition. The truth is, a lot of stuff and a lot of sweat goes into preparing, now more than ever because of my attack and because of the level of competition I've reached. So here's my typical daily Rocky routine. I run on the beach, swim laps, lift dumbbells, do lots of stretches and stomach crunches, and ride an Indo board, aka a balance board, and a skateboard. There are times when the last thing I feel like doing is running another mile, but I'm seriously concentrating these days on stepping up the physical. So just in case I don't feel like pushing myself, I have a great coach from Australia, Russell Lewis, who's trained other world champs to push me farther and harder than I ever think I or any human can go. He's been with me 4 years, and he's amazing. He helps you feel totally prepared. Once he had half the girls he was training fill out heat sheets and pretend they were judging a surf contest while the others went surfing, and then we switched roles. The goal? To help the girls in the water learn what judges were looking for. Russell critiqued us on our own riding style, performance, even head placement. The head is the heaviest part of the body, and putting it in the right place makes a difference in drive and speed down a wave. I have another coach, Ben Aipa, the legendary coach of surfing gods like Sonny Garcia and Kelly Slater, who's helped me a lot since the attack. I have to do things differently now, and Ben is a solution to every problem. For example, he taught me to kick with my feet while paddling. With only one arm, you don't have a lot of power to propel yourself. Well, I was kicking, but I just didn't seem to be up to speed. So he said, "Don't be afraid to grunt and make noise out there." I felt pretty stupid at first, but I did it, and it worked. Anything he comes up with, I listen to. My other coaches are my parents. Dad's my game plan man. Before a heat, we sit and watch the waves coming into shore, and then we discuss my best approach. My mom coaches me more on the mental and spiritual side of my surfing. She kind of helps me get into my zone. We pray for my peace of mind out there. Surf speak. One of the coolest things about surfing is it has a language all its own. Here are just a few of the terms we surfers use in and out of the waves. Glassy. When the surface of the water is smooth and without wind. Set. Waves usually come in sets of 2 to 5. Angry growler. A huge, gnarly wave. Haired out. Too scared to take off on a wave. Power turn. A manner of surfing where each turn is taken with strong, deliberate force. Scorched. Being dropped in on or burned by another surfer. Sometimes refers to taking a severe wipeout. Promising swell. A swell predicted by the weather service that is starting to show up. Stoked. More than excited. Paddling out. Stroking out to where the waves begin to break. Jostling for position. A term used in competitive surfing for getting into the place where you can catch the wave first. Drop in. Sliding into a wave. Aerials. A maneuver that has a surfer soaring in the air before landing. Backdoor barrel. Dropping into a wave so late that you have to go through the pitching peak to get to the shoulder of the wave. Grommet, or grom. A young surfer. Thruster. A three-finned board. Ding. A dent in a board. Tiki. A wooden god formerly worshipped by Polynesians. Duck dive. Diving under waves to get to the sets. Groovemeister. A kawaii term for someone who is smooth when surfing. Close out. When the wave breaks all at the same time, giving you no place to go. Rip. The current that draws a swimmer out to sea. Also, the art of aggressive surfing. Off the wall. A surf spot in Oahu that attracts lots of photographers. Being pitched. To be thrown off the top of the wave. Airdrop. A very late takeoff when the surfer drops through the air to the bottom of the wave. Wax up. To put sticky wax on top of the surfboard to keep from slipping. Boil. A bubbling movement of water around a submerged rock or reef head. Chop. Small waves on the face of the water or a wave produced by unfavorable winds. Pummeled. Getting tossed around by a breaking wave. Aggro. Aggressive surfing or surfer. Inside the bowl. The bowl refers to a part of some waves that tend to wrap around into a bowl shape. Ankle slappers. Small waves. Bottom turn. The turn made at the bottom of a breaking wave. Cutback. A sharp turn back toward the power center of the wave. Goofy foot. Right foot forward. Regular foot. Left foot forward. Kick out. To thrust out of the wave at the end of the ride. Bail. To abandon the board and head for the bottom. Bogus. Fake. Carve. To surf using lots of turns and cutbacks. Full on. Committed and intense. Gnarly. Heavy, powerful, thick. Gun. Big board used for giant surf. Impact zone. The place where all the power of a breaking wave focuses. Lineup. The place where waves first start to break and where surfers sit. Macking. Huge sets like a Mack truck. Quad. Four fins. Getting worked. Taking a bad wipeout. Kook. A novice surfer who gets in the way. Dirty lickings. To take a severe wipeout. Ragdolled. To be held under and swept around by the power of the wave. Skeg. The fin of a surfboard. Soul surfer. A surfer who merely surfs for the love of the sport. Spongers. Surfers who ride bodyboards. Soup. The white water made by a breaking wave. Stringer. The wooden strip running down the center of a surfboard. Flat. No surf. Offshore. The preferable wind direction blowing from land to sea. Zoo. A place packed with surfers. Burned. When another surfer takes off on the same wave that you're riding. Stuffed. When a surfer burns you and then by his actions forces the wave to bury you. Tubed. Riding deep inside the pitching wave. Chapter 14, Aftermath. I think a lot about how my accident has affected the lives of the people around me. When something like this happens, you're not the only one who feels pain and suffering. You're not the only one who's left with a scar. Alana's normally a kind of quiet girl, and I know she tends to keep a lot inside. I know that she has a hard time with this. There were nights she was so haunted by what happened that she was too scared to sleep alone in her room. Instead, she'd crawl into her parents' bed. She'd also cry for no reason in particular. And I do think that it's also had an impact on her surfing. She doesn't like to surf some of the fine breaks that are far from shore, and she's never been able to bring herself to return to tunnels. We talk about it off and on and both feel the same way, even though I'm the one who was actually attacked. Alana never even saw the shark, but being so close to a terrible accident can have the same effect as being the victim. She knows that it could have just as easily been her. We've been friends since Hanabata days, a Hawaiian term used for the days of childhood, but it really means from the days we had snotty noses. And we're more like sisters than friends. And to have something bad happen to your sister really hits you deeply. I don't really push her to talk about it. With our friendship, there's this kind of unspoken language between us. I can almost read her mind, and she can read mine. So we don't have to spend a lot of time with words. We get it. We understand what the other's feeling without asking, what's up? Alana's dad, Holt, also has a lot to deal with. He's constantly asking himself, what if the ambulance hadn't come in time? What if I had made the decision earlier that morning that the waves were too small to bother with and we had all gone home? What if the bite had been more severe? Alana, her family, and I have all had counseling to help us deal with the stress. That counseling seemed to help a lot. Today, I can honestly say it's not something I constantly think about, which is a major step toward healing. Of course, every once in a while I see myself in the mirror and it hits me. Whoa, you only have one arm, girl. And every so often I see pictures of myself with both arms and I feel a twinge of sadness. But I'm working, we all are, to get over it. To deal with the new challenges. Past is past. On to bigger and better. The new me. The changes I've undergone have been both physical and emotional. First of all, I don't wear shoes much anymore. You try tying your own laces with one hand. I either go barefoot or wear my rubber slippers. I have a prosthetic arm, but honestly, I never wear it. It just hangs by the window in my room. I tried it, but it was too unnatural and restricting with all the straps and the clothing that must go over it. Especially for someone like me who spends 90% of her day in a bathing suit. So I just kind of run around with my one arm. I call what's left of the other Stumpy. I have an agent, Roy, in Beverly Hills trying to find deals for me. He wants to help get my story out all over the place, to use it to inspire people. He also wants me not to have to worry about the future. But it's a funny kind of a relationship because I want to do all the interviews and other things he lines up, but at the same time I'm always trying to get out of them. Things like interviews keep me from doing what I love, surfing. I worried that Rip Curl wouldn't want to sponsor me after the attack, but they were incredibly supportive. They just want me to be myself. Of course, if I enter and win contests, that makes them really happy. And naturally, they want me to wear Rip Curl clothing, which I like to do because I think it's cute. They think it's funny that I knot up one sleeve of their shirt when I'm doing a TV interview. Right from the start, while I was still in the hospital, they let me know that they were sticking with me. And that's a very cool thing for a company to do. Now, besides winning contests, they see me as an ambassador of goodwill and the surfing culture. If I ever stop entering contests, I'm sure I'll still be sponsored to surf, and that I'll be in ads featuring their clothing. And here is the coolest thing. If I never win another contest, or if I decide to leave the contest scene altogether, people would still know me and recognize me as that surfer girl who got her arm bitten off by a shark. I think I'll forever be tied to the sport because of what happened, which is very cool. I'd like people to associate me with surfing, even when I'm 90 years old. I have a feeling I'll be on a board even then. What's in my bag when I travel? Bible, lip balm with sunscreen, Rip Girl clothes, no cell phone, not healthy, no shoes, my fave CDs for the flight or drive, surf magazines. I read the ones I'm in, but I think I sound like a goof a lot of the time. A camera to shoot pics to show my friends and family back home. A cool journal to keep track of what I'm doing and feeling. Surfboard. Me in the movies? Roy promised me there'd be some really big things coming up for me, but a movie of my life? I can't really imagine it. Who will play me? But I'm looking forward to the surfing scenes, which I'll do, and I have faith that it'll be a true movie and convey my faith. I guess I've even had a little taste of the Hollywood scene already. I've been on the red carpet to the ESPY and Teen Choice Awards. Who would ever have thought I'd be meeting Britney Spears and rubbing elbows with celebs? It was wild. And I had my friends Chantilly and Tiffany from Beverly Hills to escort me to these events and style me. Thank God. Without them, I would have probably been walking down the red carpet barefoot. I was just in Portugal where I made a short film for Volvo. In it, I drive a car down the beach and teach surfing to greet Consuela, the jockey. It was fun, although I don't really think I have it in me to be an actress. It took way too long, almost a whole day to shoot just one little 3-minute commercial. Actors must have a lot of patience. I'll be back in New York City in the winter for an event at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. I'll be receiving an honor from the Women's Sports Federation. I'm very determined to do a lot of cool surfing before that award to prove I deserve it. All of this glamorous stuff is great, but my biggest excitement is getting to work with the World Vision Foundation, which is a Christian humanitarian organization that helps poor children in about 100 countries around the world. I'm excited to work with World Vision because through them, I can use my voice to help children living in poverty with disabilities get the care and support they need. Many children around the world have to fend for themselves if they have disabilities or health problems. World Vision has a program called Put Hope in Motion that lets me use my surfing to raise awareness and funds to help these kids. Chapter 15, Part of a Plan. When I was a kid, I learned something that Christ said. As a person who lives near the beach, it made a lot of sense to me. These words I speak to you are not incidental additions to your life, homeowner improvements to your standard of living. They are foundational words, words to build a life on. If you work these words into your life, you are like a smart carpenter who built his house on solid rock. Rain poured down, the river flooded, a tornado hit, but nothing moved that house. It was fixed to the rock. But if you just use my words in Bible studies and don't work them into your life, you are like a stupid carpenter who built his house on the sandy beach. When a storm rolled in and the waves came up, it collapsed like a house of cards. Matthew 7, verse 24 through 27, The Message. My plans to be a professional surfer got hit pretty hard on that Halloween morning. It was my own personal tornado. In the days, weeks, and months that followed, I had a lot of cleaning up to do. Often it was scary or trying, and I won't lie to you, in some ways it still is. But for me, knowing that God loves me and that He has a plan for my life that no shark can take away is like having solid rock underneath me. Look, lots of bad stuff happens to people. That's life. And here's my advice. Don't put all your hope and faith into something that could suddenly and easily disappear. And honestly, that's almost anything. The only thing that will never go away, that will never fail you, is your faith in God. I've been very blessed in my life. People ask me, how can you say that after this horrible thing happened to you? Because I have to look at the big picture. I have a family that loves me, supports me, and encourages me to go after my dreams. I have a big ohana of Christian friends and friends from the community and the surf world that care about me. I have close personal friends like Sarah, Holt, Troy, and Malia, Alana, Kayla, Noelani, Savannah, Kristen, Michelle, Camille, Jackie, Kaylee, Kaya, and Summer, to name a few. These people like me for who I am. One arm, two arms, or no arms, it doesn't matter. But most of all, I have a relationship with Christ that keeps me strong and helps me see how good can come out of a bad situation. I think the reason I haven't gotten all bummed about losing an arm is due to God. I think that the reason I have been able to tell my story on TV and in magazines is because God wanted other people to know that He is the rock that you can build your life on. So I think this was God's plan for me all along. I'm not saying that God made the shark bite me. I think He knew it would happen, and He made a way for my life to be happy and meaningful in spite of it happening. I know sometimes people get angry at God when bad things that can't be explained happen to them, which I can understand, and I know that I sometimes wonder, why me? There was this guy named Job in the Old Testament who was a believer but had really terrible things happen to him. So bad that his friends told him that he must have done something really awful to deserve what was happening, and that he ought to just cuss out God and die. His reply to those guys was, "Even if God kills me, yet I will trust Him." He knew that God was good and that He loved him in spite of everything. Well, I can't explain why, but I have the same kind of attitude. I know in the beginning my family struggled to make sense of my attack, but now they've made peace with it. They trust that God knows what's going on and will make good come from bad. I think that if I can help other people find hope in God, then that is worth losing my arm for. My friend Sarah says that I get to be the voice of God. I usually roll my eyes when she says it because if I were God, I would never have chosen me of all people to speak for Him. There are a lot of other people who can say things better than I can, but it is His plan. And for reasons I don't understand, at least for a while, He's chosen me to say what He wants people to know, that He is real, that He loves them, and that they can know Him and trust Him. Maybe He picked me because I tell it like it is. I don't know how to sound smart or sophisticated in interviews. I just say what's in my heart and hopefully my mouth cooperates. And I am thankful. I could have died. I could have been really mangled. I could have been hurt so bad that I might not even be able to surf again. I have lots and lots of things to be thankful for. I don't really want people looking to me for inspiration. I just want to be a sign along the way that points toward heaven. I think that God probably did talk to Sarah on the way to the hospital. That verse He brought to her mind was not just for my brother, my mom, or for me. I think it's for every person who's feeling down or defeated or a little lost in life, perhaps angry or frustrated by what's going on. "For I know the plans I have for you," declares the Lord. "Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future." I'm proud to be part of God's plans, and I hope, in some small way, this surfer girl from Hawaii can make Him proud too. To continue, please insert the next CD. Chapter 16. That was then. This is now. I believe God made me for a purpose, but He also made me fast, and when I run, I feel God's pleasure. Olympic runner Eric Little. Has it really been 5 years since I first wrote Soul Surfer? Crazy! All of that excitement surrounding my book, all those interviews and appearances and hearing about it climbing up the bestseller list, that feels like so long ago. So much has happened since. It's all kind of a big blur. When people ask me, "Bethany, what have you done since then?" I usually shrug and reply, "I don't even know where to begin." My dog Ginger passed away, and I got a new puppy Shar Pei, Hannah. My older brother Noah got married. I went skydiving twice. My family started the Friends of Bethany Foundation to help shark attack survivors and amputees. There have been book signings, appearances, and travels around the world for surf trips, competitions, and mission trips. Overall, just sharing my story, hopefully inspiring others to live their lives to the fullest. And of course, I've been surfing. For me, it's like breathing, something that's so a part of me I can't imagine living without it. My hand and feet are constantly wrinkled and waterlogged. I'm in the water so much. I've definitely grown and excelled a lot in my surfing, and that's given me an even stronger love and passion for the sport. From barrel riding to big wave surfing, I've just fallen in love with the art of riding waves. Surfing competitions have taken me from one corner of the globe to the other, and I thrill at every victory and agonize over every defeat. I try not to dwell on the losses too long, though. I'm very competitive, and I think that's a good thing. I think that knowing what you want and going for it is something everyone should strive to do. I'm the same person I always was, but I also feel like I've grown so much, too. It's like part of me is still the same surf grom who craves the waves while the other part of me is thinking about life in the future. One thing for sure hasn't changed. I'm still always following my dream and following the path that God sets before me. I may have no clue where I'm going, but He sure does. A lot of teens feel this way, I know. You graduate high school and you're like, what now? I can relate. It's like all of a sudden you're face to face with your future and it's one giant question mark. What will I do? Who will I be? I think part of growing up is finding your faith. It's faith in God, faith in yourself, faith that everyone has a gift, a talent, and a purpose. God wants you to pursue your gift to the fullest of your ability. That's doing His work. And if you're not quite sure what that gift is, then have faith it'll come to you when you're ready to accept it. I'm always kind of shell-shocked when something incredible or new comes my way. Sometimes I'm scared because it's something I've never done or tried before and I'm not sure I'll be a success. Well, it's like the first time you get on a surfboard. Of course you're going to fall off, and then fall off again and again and again, till you get your footing and your balance. The more you try, the more you refuse to give up, the better you get at riding the waves. So, in the course of these past 5 years, a lot of amazing opportunities have been placed before me. The most incredible is the making of Soul Surfer into a major motion picture. Okay, reality check here. Me as a movie? My friends and I are having a good laugh at that one. I am not the kind of person who wants to be a movie star or even famous. I'm just a fairly normal young adult, despite what people have in their minds about me. Once I got over the initial shock of my life playing on giant screens around the world, I thought, well, why not? If this is what God has in mind, if this will take my message, His message, and bring it to an even larger audience, then why not? So Soul Surfer is now a movie starring Anna Sophia Robb, Helen Hunt, Dennis Quaid, Lorraine Nicholson, and Carrie Underwood in theaters April 15th, 2011. Seriously, it has been an amazing experience making this film, from the first meetings with the director to casting, filming the stunts, and seeing it all edited together. I've kept a movie journal just for you, so I could share all the special and crazy moments along the way. When I look back now, I can't believe it's all finished, and I'm going to get to see the final product. It was a journey for sure, for everyone involved, but I think we've all grown for having gone through it together. At least I know I have. My top 5 favorite moments over the past 5 years. Number 1. Surfing around the world. Brazil, Australia, Indonesia, Portugal, South Africa, Puerto Rico, and Tahiti. Not many girls my age can say they've been all over the world. I'm so blessed. My surfing competitions take me to practically every corner of the globe. When there's downtime during the competition waiting period, I try to venture out and explore the area. Like when I went to Europe in 2010, I got to go to Paris, France with a few friends and just enjoy some art and history in one of the most beautiful cities in the world. I like to try the local healthy, or sometimes not that healthy, food and occasionally get to hang out with the local family or friends and see what their lifestyle's like. Here's how it goes when I hit a new locale for a competition. Sometimes I'll have to travel as much as 36 hours to get to a destination. First, I have to adjust to the time zone and get my bearings of the area. After settling in, I head for the competition zone and try to surf there no matter what the conditions, which are usually not the best. I need time to adjust to the water temperature, the difference in the waves, and the tide changes. Some places have really extreme tides. Then I just rest and try to get my mind set and focused for competition. Once the contest starts, it's all about getting 2 good wave scores in 20 to 30 minutes. You want to get good or excellent scores, and only your best 2 count. Though it sounds easy, this can often be really challenging. This is why I train every day, because I want to become the best surfer I can be. And hopefully that'll be reflected in my competition results. In surfing, unlike other sports, there are a lot of different factors. Sometimes the wave conditions factor higher than your surf competitors. Sometimes your competition results don't reflect your talent as a surfer, but sometimes they do. Right now, I'm ranked in the top 25 in the world along with my friends Alana Blanchard and Carissa Moore. But I know that I have the ability to excel on any day. My highlight was finishing number 2 by 0.5 point in the World Junior Pro in Australia in January 2009. Number 2. Getting straight, strong, and healthy. In 2010, I started correcting my posture, spinal alignment, through Dilberg Integrated Healthcare. Hey, I'm sitting up straight now as I write. I believe posture has a huge effect on your health. I really enjoyed learning about it and reading up on this subject. I never would have thought that misalignment could cause everything from bad digestion to headaches, but it does. For me, it's kind of a different situation because I have one arm, but I feel that it's important for everyone, whether you have 4 limbs or no limbs, to make posture a priority. I'm working on correcting my posture through several different exercises that were designed specifically for me. Also with Dilberg Integrated Healthcare, I've been working on building my strength to better my surfing and overall fitness. They've put together a customized program that I can take on the road when I travel. In recent years, I've also realized that diet plays a huge role in your body's health and performance. I began to notice that when I eat well, I have great energy, and when I don't, I just don't feel as energetic. My diet now consists of mostly organic foods. Lots of vegetables, fresh fish, sprouted beans, sprouts, fruit, nuts and seeds, and a little dark chocolate here and there. Even if I weren't a pro surfer, I'd still eat this way. It's one of the aspects of health that we can somewhat control. We can't fully control our surroundings and the toxins and chemicals that exist in the places we go, but at least we can do our part to contribute to good health by what we put in our bodies. It's been really amazing to learn about this and then actually see its effect on my life. Number 3. The Children of Thailand. In 2005, it was really exciting for me when World Vision, a Christian relief, development, and advocacy organization dedicated to working with children, families, and communities to overcome poverty and injustice, asked me to go to Thailand. My friend, youth pastor Sarah Hill, encouraged me to go. Thailand had recently been hit by a tsunami, and though it was almost a year later, the people were still in great need and still trying to recover their lives. When I was there, it was an incredibly powerful experience, truly faith in action. The area had been devastated by the tsunami that took homes and families. People, particularly children, were terrified to go back into the water. I know this feeling. I was scared the first time I got back in the waves after I lost my arm, but I was able to put my faith in God and allow Him to guide me. This is how I helped a little boy get back into the water and a group of other kids, too. We did surf lessons and just had fun together playing in the ocean. I think it encouraged the parents, too, watching the kids surf and have fun in the ocean. Once they could heal, their future as fishermen was preserved. I visited a few people's homes and an orphanage and became friends with a young girl, Kitsara, who had lost her mom and a brother in the tsunami. She, like me, realized that oftentimes good things come out of our bad experiences. Another thing that was really cool was that World Vision was helping the people build their traditional Thai fishing boats so they could get back out there and provide for their families. Number 4. Make-A-Wish Foundation. 2 young girls, Lauren and Catherine, wanted me to teach them surfing. They both had chronic illnesses. Lauren had chronic adhesive arachnoiditis, and Katie had cystic fibrosis. They had both requested as their wish to meet me. So the Make-A-Wish Foundation flew them and their families out to Hawaii so we could spend some time together. I was so honored to meet such inspiring souls. I can't even describe how amazing it made me feel to put a smile on their faces. We did a surf lesson with the girls at Hanalei Bay near the pier, where I learned to surf when I was little. It's so gnarly to have such a bad illness at such a young age. It breaks my heart. The girls are just normal, fun-loving kids, and it feels so wrong that they have to deal with all that. In our time together, we just mainly focused on having fun and enjoying life, And that's what I encourage them to do. Every day is a blessing. Number 5, Mexico. Almost every year, my church youth group goes on a mission trip to Tijuana, Mexico. We meet up with Spectrum Ministries in San Diego, then head across the border. Our goals as a group are to go in and help the orphanages with whatever they need help with. It could be anything from feeding, bathing, and playing with the kids to building or painting. Just anything. Whatever they ask us to do. Most important, our priority is to just love the kids and be a light, sharing Jesus' love. One day of the trip, we go into town and set up showers and stations where kids can get clean, get their hair brushed, and get new clothes and shoes. My task on one of the bathhouse days was washing the kids' feet. Washing their feet was really cool because that's what Jesus did for the disciples. It symbolizes being cleansed of your sins. It was hard to know whether any of them knew Jesus because I don't speak Spanish and they don't speak English. But it was really cool to do something so simple for them since they have so little. The kids were adorable and they just liked having attention from all us older kids. We also go to the dump where families actually live and pass out food. It's really sad to see the living conditions for the people there. It was just crazy handing food to them and seeing how grateful they were. They live their lives scrounging for scraps or trying to find stuff in the junkyard that they can sell to buy some food. It was humbling to see how grateful and excited they were. The whole experience just encourages me to know how blessed I am, not to have to worry about what and when I'm going to eat next, and just to be thankful for everything I have. Overall, it's just really fun hanging out with the little kids and stepping into a whole different world. Chapter 17, My Movie Journal. The experience of making a movie of Soul Surfer was one I will never forget. I wanted to share it with all of you to give you a peek into what it's like behind the scenes on a set. There were lots of things I never expected, and a lot of movie magic that just blew me away. I like to think of this process as a journey in which I made lots of incredible new friends and family, like Anna Sophia Robb and director Sean McNamara. And once again, I learned to put my faith in God and trust He would lead me on the right path. I think we all felt His presence while making this film. December 1st, 2009. So I just found out that Sony Pictures is going to distribute Soul Surfer. We've been talking to producers and Hollywood executives for a long, long time. Really, ever since we released the original book and it got so much great attention. That was about 5 years ago. We've been through several scripts, several production companies, and lots of setbacks. But I'll admit, I never thought it would really happen. I was kind of like, yeah, sure. But then the wheels started to turn, we got a director, then a financier, then a script that everyone liked. And now we have a signed and sealed distribution deal with one of the biggest movie companies in Hollywood. Wow. That's pretty much all I can say at this moment. I'm a little in shock because the thought of me and my family's life up on a huge movie screen, well, it's weird and quite nerve-wracking. But at the same time, I am beyond stoked. Because I know that this is going to take my message to a whole new level. If I can reach out to millions of moviegoers and help them find faith in God, well, it's a huge gift for me. What I really want is to create an impactful movie that changes lives. And as always, God steps in and shows me the way. He always has plans for me. I just have to ride the wave wherever He takes me and trust that my family won't come off looking cheesy on the big screen. December 10th, 2009. I just got an email saying that Anna Sophia Robb has been cast to play me in the movie. I'm really happy and really stoked. She's a great actress. My mom and I had actually seen her in Bridge to Terabithia, and we suggested she play me. She also starred in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Samantha, an American Girl movie, Return to Witch Mountain, Because of Winn-Dixie, and others. She says on her website that she's really committed to a lot of charity organizations and believes in changing the world for the better. My kind of girl. I think she'll totally get me, and she'll really be able to understand how and why I do what I do. One thing I really like about Anna Sophia is her eyes. She really just brings the passion, drama, and emotions that she needs to show on a screen through her eyes. It's beautiful, and it really shows how important and serious a role is to her. They say the eyes reflect the soul. I can't believe she's only 16. She's so mature and accomplished for that age. I'm so blessed to have her starring as me. The only thing that kind of makes me laugh, she's really small. I'm like 5'11", and she's maybe 5'2". Well, hopefully movie magic will make her look more my size. And of course, I'm also a little concerned because they tell me she's never been on a surfboard before. But I plan on fixing that real soon. December 14th, 2009. Big night tonight. We went out to dinner at a restaurant in Hanalei with my family, my manager at the time, Roy, and the VPs from Sony Pictures Affirm Films, Rich Peluso and Steve Okin. Well, actually, first I was surfing, and I came in from the waves and saw them on the beach watching me. That's where we initially met, which seems just right, since the waves are my home and where much of the movie's going to take place. My first thoughts, they are really nice guys, not all Hollywood slick as I imagine they might be. I'm really blessed to have them on board. In a lot of ways, they understand me because they believe in Jesus as well. It's a relief to know that we share that as a team. They're from Tennessee, and they both have a lot of kids, so they're used to dealing with lots of energy and chaos. We told them that this movie's got to be done right, because we're going to live with it for the rest of our lives. And, hello, this is my life we're showing to everybody who sees the movie. It has to be real. It has to look like and sound like me and my family and friends. I am all about the truth. You will never hear me embellish something or lie, because I know that God wants me to tell the truth and His truth. So yeah, I'm sure it's really tempting to get all special FX and dramatic with stuff. It's a movie, and that's what movies do. There's like music playing in the background while I surf. That never happens in real life, trust me. But I also don't want them to lose sight of what's really important to me, the reason we're doing this. Rich and Steve nodded. They understand how it's way more to me than a movie. But dinner was great, and my family all got to meet them. It was pretty low-key. We just got to chat and get to know each other. I'm feeling really good about how things are going so far. December 15th, 2009. Tonight we had a barbecue with a bunch of the movie crew. I couldn't even begin to name all the people who were there. There were probably about 10 guys all here for some part of the movie. It feels like all the pieces of this puzzle are beginning to come together. I got to chat with the main producers and also the director, Sean McNamara, and he showed me some really cool stuff on his computer. He showed us how he'll make Anna Sophia look like she has one arm. It's really cool how they do it, kind of like the effect in Forrest Gump when the actor has to play a soldier who has lost his legs. She wears a green sleeve on her left arm, kind of like a green screen, and above it she wears a prosthetic that looks like my stump. With some special digital effects, the arm disappears and the stump remains. It looks exactly like what my arm looks like. I can't wait to see how it looks in action in the movie. They also showed us drawings of the screenplay, the storyboard. The artist was really good at capturing the action. It seemed like it would take a long time to create this. Each little picture was drawn with great detail, and they were really pretty. Not just sketches or scribbles, but works of art. I remember when I was little, I did video morning news crew at Hanalei Elementary School, and our teacher, Miss Hermstad, made us draw play-by-play storyboards for our broadcast. Mine didn't look nearly as good as these, but I remember the process. It helps you map out the sequence of action and what the camera will be capturing. Every angle and what the viewer will be seeing. Everyone was really nice. It was great meeting all those guys and just having them come out to meet our family on Kauai and seeing where we live. They did a lot of location scouting all over the island, trying to get an idea of the different locations where scenes in the movie took place in real life. They also watched me surf, which made me a little bit nervous because I was under pressure to perform. I didn't want to disappoint. The best part of the day? They got to see our glorious sunset on the beach, what I like to think of as God painting His storyboard on the sky. December 18th, 2009. So I talked to Anna Sophia for the first time yesterday. I wasn't really nervous for the call. I'm just not that kind of person to get nervous about those types of things. But then when I was talking to her, I did notice I was stuttering a little, and I couldn't think of what to say. A lot of long pauses. Okay, maybe I was a little uneasy. I didn't know if we had anything in common, but she was so sweet and I really liked her instantly. I think she felt the same way. We just clicked. I think she's going to be a great girl for the role. She's really motivated to work hard and she told me she's getting ready to start training physically. She told me she's going to start swimming a lot and working with a trainer who'll hopefully teach her a lot of balance work, so she'll be able to balance on the surfboard. She'll also work on leg and arm strengthening so she'll be able to get up with one or two arms. It's not easy, and I know she has a long road ahead of her. She said she couldn't wait to come out here and meet me and my family, to learn more about her role, who I am and who our family is as a whole. I can't wait to meet her in person and get to know her more. I told her she should come out to Hawaii sooner rather than later because I'm leaving for a surf contest in early January. Hopefully she'll make it out here in late December so we can catch up for a week before I leave. I think it's really important we have one-on-one time, because once the movie starts, she's going to be so busy we won't really be able to hang out much. So it'd be great to get to know each other before it all goes down. Anna Sophia told me she was on her way to a sleepover with all her cousins. It's like an annual thing they do. We also talked about her school. She's in 10th grade, and she goes to public school in Colorado. She said it's a pretty small community-type town/area, the same as Hawaii or Kauai, so that was cool. We have something in common. She told me she's never surfed, but she snowboards and she's pretty good at swimming. I think she'll be really confident in the water. I can't wait to show her how I live and get her out there surfing. January 2nd, 2010. Anna Sophia came out to Kauai to learn to surf and meet my family and me. The first time we met was a little awkward. Honestly, I was at first a little shocked. She's really cute, but she's also really tiny. Plus, she has no tan. It's hard for me to picture her playing me. But you can't judge a book by its cover, right? She might look small and sweet, but I do think she has a lot of inner strength. She came with her youth leader and friend, Rachel. It was just really fun having them out. I took her to learn how to surf where I learned to surf in Hanalei. And her very first time, she did really well. She was